Would the Senate please come to order? Will members please vote to signify their presence? Senator Ogden?
The roll shows 20 members present.
Please stand for our invocation today by our chaplain, Pastor Mike Rose of the Juno Christian Center.
Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for this beautiful day to celebrate and praise your majestic name. As the psalmist said, O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. Lord, we thank you for the privilege of living in this great nation with the rich Christian heritage, whereby we proclaim that we are one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. Lord, we pray for righteousness to prevail over corruption. We pray for your intervention in the affairs of government. We pray that you will give our president and the leadership in Washington wisdom in all the decisions they make today. We ask for your protection for our troops abroad and for your grace and comfort to extend to their families. Lord, grant wisdom to the Senate today in all their deliberations. Give them strength, insight, and understanding as they deal with each issue. We also pray that your protection and peace will be with their families. God, we ask that the state of Alaska will be recognized by its righteousness, prosperity, and peace. I pray this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Senator Stedman, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I certify as to the correctness of the journals for the 82nd through 84th legislative days and for House and Senate Joint Journal Supplement number 17.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent that the journals and supplements be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, the journals and supplements will be approved as certified. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Brings us to introduction of guests. Do we have guests for introduction? Senator Gary Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a pleasure to have in the gallery behind me a former student who is, his name is Paul Bowie. He's from Kodiak. He's here with the State Red Cross Board and a member of the Coast Guard. And if he'd stand, and as I said, a former student, I didn't seem to have destroyed him. He's done very well since. Please welcome him. And Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
One other person I'd like to introduce in the other gallery, Michelle Wanaka from Homer, and she's with the Family Planning Center in Homer. Please welcome Michelle.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Also with the Board of Directors of the American Red Cross is a constituent of mine, Mr. Jamie Young, and if the body could help me, welcome him.
Senator Ben Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also have a constituent here as a member of the Board of the American Red Cross, and he's also the Chief Operating Officer of the South Central Red Cross in Anchorage. Please welcome Mike Smith.
Senator Betty Davis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm pleased to have in the gallery in back of me a group of students that's from Anchorage. First of all, I want to introduce the person that's working with the talent search program, and that is Kim Patterson. And some of the students are Misa Dixon, Garden Gunn, Wanda DeCastro, June Newton, and Minnesota, M-E-N-D-O-Z-A, she's not here, okay, sorry about that. And we have Lee View, and Nikki Banks. Did I miss someone? Is it anyone else? Curtis Smith? Okay. And if I didn't call your name, just stand up anyway. Help me welcome them. Thank you.
Do we have other guests for introduction? Seeing none, it brings us down to messages from the governor.
Messages dated April 1st stating I have signed the following resolutions and transmitted the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 26, Resources, Appeal Wilderness Society versus U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Legislative Resolve Number 37, CS for House Joint Resolution Number 32, Fisheries, Amended Senate, Labeling of Fish and Fish Products, Legislative Resolve Number 38. Those are all the messages from the Governor.
Messages from the House?
I have no messages from the House.
Communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees?
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Bill Number 364, Limits State Aid for Mental Health Care, and recommends a Hess Committee substitute and adoption of a letter of intent by the Hess Committee. Previous fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Dyson Chair, Senators Green, Wilkin. Signing do not pass, Senator Davis. Signing amend, Senator Guest. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee considered House Bill Number 524, amended, Waste Management Disposal, and recommends a Resources Senate Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Ogun Chair, Senators Seekins, Ben Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senators Dyson, Elton, Lincoln, Wagner. The bill has no further referrals. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered Senate Joint Resolution Number 3, Constitutional Amendment, Appropriation Spending Limit, and recommends it be replaced with a Finance Committee substitute, which is forthcoming. New fiscal note, signing no recommendation, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs. Signing do pass, Senators Dyson, Bundy, Ben Stevens. Signing do not pass, Senator Hoffman. Signing amend, Senator Olson. The bill has no further referral. The Rules Committee has placed it on today's calendar. The Resources Committee considered CS for House Joint Resolution Number 34, Fisheries, Federal Training and Assistance for Fishermen, previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Ogun Chair, Senators Seekins, Elton, Dyson, Ben Stevens, signing no recommendation, Senators Lincoln, Wagner. The resolution has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. Those are all the standing committee reports.
Reports of special committees?
I have no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions?
There are no Senate resolutions.
Introduction of Senate bills?
Senate Bill Number 385 by the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act relating to homeland security, to civil defense, to emergencies, and to disasters, including disasters in the event of attacks, outbreaks of disease, or threats of attack or outbreak of disease, establishing the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and relating to the functions of that division and that department, and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance.
I have no further Senate bills.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar.
Senate Bill Number 40 by Senator Cowdery, an act relating to construction of highways by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The Transportation Committee considered the bill. New zero fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Cowdery Chair. Signing do not pass, Senators Olson, Lincoln. Signing no recommendation, Senators Terrio, Wagner. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended a Finance Committee substitute. New zero fiscal note, signing do pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Bundy, Ben Stevens. Signing do not pass, Senators Hoffman, Olson. Signing amend, Senator Dyson. There is a Finance Committee substitute.
Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance CS will be considered in lieu of the original bill.
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for Senate Bill 40 be considered in gross advance third reading, placed on final passage.
There is objection. Senate Bill 40 will appear on our next calendar.
Senate Bill Number 82 by Senator Gary Stevens, an act relating to the state's alcoholic beverage tax for certain wine and other beverages. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. New fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Bundy Chair, Senators Davis, Gary Stevens. Signing no recommendations, Senators French, Seekins. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended adoption of the previous Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. New fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Dyson, Bundy, Ben Stevens. Excuse me, Senator Green also signed do pass. Signing no recommendation, Senator Olson. There is a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute.
Senator Bundy.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Labor and Commerce CS will be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is an amendment number one by Senator Gary Stevens.
Senator Gary Stevens.
Mr. President, I move amendment number one.
There is objection. Could you explain?
Mr. President, amendment number one would simply tighten the language in the bill to clarify the intent of this legislation.
Is the objection maintained? Brief at ease. Would the Senate come back to order, please? Is the objection to Amendment Number 1 maintained? It is maintained. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I can fully appreciate, having sponsored legislation myself in the past that moved from one body to another, the desire of a member or a sponsor to preclude other folks in the process making decisions regarding the same subject matter. But I think it's not a, you know, we should be respectful of other people's abilities to make decisions and to make good proposals for good public policy in the area of alcohol. So I don't think it's a wise move to tighten up the title in this regard. Again, I understand the sponsor's desires here to only deal with his issue, but to preclude, it's presumptuous of us to decide that other folks shouldn't have a voice in these issues related to alcoholic beverages. So for that reason, just on a general principle of not tying people's hands, I can't support the amendment.
Okay. Is there further debate on the amendment? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall Amendment Number 1 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
15 yeas, 5 nays.
By a vote of 15 yeas, 5 nays, Amendment Number 1 has passed the Senate.
I have no further amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent. Consent Committee substitute for Senate Bill 82, as amended, be considered a gross advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Without objection, Senate Bill 82 will advance from second to third reading on the same day.
CS for Senate Bill Number 82, Labor and Commerce, title amended, an act relating to the state alcoholic beverage tax for certain wine and other beverages on amounts sold or in or consigned for shipment into the state that exceed 100 gallons a month, and to the treatment of two or more taxpayers who have a relationship for purposes of applying the tax for certain wine and other beverages.
We are on third reading. Under general debate, Senator Gary Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. This bill is intended to bring some fairness to the state's liquor laws by providing wineries with a tax exemption for the first 100 gallons of wine sold. Mr. President, you may remember the 22nd legislature passed House Bill 225 into law primarily to allow breweries to keep the former tax rate of 35 cents per gallon on sales of the first 60,000 barrels of beer. That passed, but there was no similar consideration given to the four small wineries that also exist in our state. And when that bill passed, it raised the tax on wine from local, these small wineries, from 85 cents per gallon to $2.50 per gallon. Certainly, this bill that passed last year helped the breweries, but unfortunately, it did put the wineries at a disadvantage, the small emerging wineries. And so Senate Bill 82 in front of you is intended to reduce the tax burden for small Alaska wine producers. Currently, they're taxed at the rate of $2.50 per gallon. And those wineries, Mr. President, are in Anchorage, Haines, and Kodiak.
Further debate? Mr. Minority Leader.
Point of order, Mr. President. I purposefully did not interrupt the speaker who sponsored this legislation and feels very strongly about it. But he, on several occasions there in his remarks, made very specific reference to previous action, very specific legislation. I was ruled out of order for doing the very same thing in a previous discussion. And so I would appeal to you, Mr. President, to be very circumspect and very fair and very consistent in your application of the rules about debate.
Mr. Minority Leader, you caught me not paying attention. I'll watch that more closely. Any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 82, Labor and Commerce, title amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, committee substitute for Senate Bill 82, Labor and Commerce, title amended, has passed the Senate. Senator Elton.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Will the Senate come back to order? Senator Gary Stevens.
I move and ask unanimous consent to go back up the calendar to the introduction of guests.
Without objection, we'll go back up to introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a real pleasure in the Grow Gallery to be able to present a delegation of people from the community of Seward. And if they'd stand, former Representative Margaret Branson, Vice Mayor Vanta Schaefer, City Council Member Willard Dunham, and City Manager Phil Shealy, please welcome them to the Senate.
Any other guests for introduction? Seeing none, brings us back down to the calendar.
Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 328 by Senator Stedman, an act relating to the National Forest Income Program in the Department of Community and Economic Development and to the authority of the department to adopt regulations, making conforming amendments and providing for an effective date. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered the bill. Zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Stedman, Chair, Senators Wagner, Elton. Signing no recommendation, Senators Lincoln, Gary Stevens. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a Finance Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senator Ben Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senators Dyson, Hoffman, Bundy. There is a Finance Committee substitute.
Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Senator Wilkin for an explanation.
Thank you, Mr. President. The only change is on page 2, line 6, and we added an effective date of June 30th, 2008, which essentially has the effect of sunsetting the action of the legislation.
Is the objection maintained? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As to the amendment that was made on page 2, my understanding is that it provides that the students that are counted are the ones that are enrolled in the district. My understanding is that the Craig Correspondence School has a couple of hundred students that reside in the forest but happen to reside in Ketchikan. I'd be interested in knowing if the effect of the amendment in finance was to not count those students.
Senator Wilkin.
Pardon me, Mr. President. I had my book open to the wrong bill. So that should make a difference.
So there's an effective date on something today.
Yeah, I knew there was an effective date. Thank you. What we did in finance is instead of having an effective beginning July 1st of this year, it's July 1st of next year. That gives the school district of Craig the opportunity to adjust their budget because they've already expected those revenues in their budget for next year.
Is the objection maintained? Senator Elton.
Mr. President, I guess a specific question I had is that Craig operates a correspondence program with students in Ketchikan who reside in the Tongass Forest. And I'd like to know if the effect of the change made in finance is to exempt those students served by the Craig Correspondence School who reside in Ketchikan, if that exempts those students and that student count from the Tongass, from the Forest Receipts Program.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Senator. And it does? It exempts those. The legislation and the amendment only brings in those students that are actually within the Craig School District to be counted for forest receipts. So if a student was in Ketchikan while within the Tongass National Forest, they would not be included in this legislation because they were not within the school district of Craig.
Senator Elton.
Would those students then be counted as students in Ketchikan for the purposes of receipts to the school district in Ketchikan?
Senator Wilkin.
The students in Ketchikan in the correspondence program would be counted as students for correspondence purposes, but not be beneficiaries of the forest receipts. Is that your question?
Is the objection maintained? The objection to the finance CS is maintained. Is there any further debate? The question before the body is, shall the finance CS be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
12 yeas, 8 nays.
By a vote of 12 yeas to 8 nays, the finance CS has been adopted in lieu of the original bill.
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent. Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 328 be considered advanced, engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
There is objection. Senate Bill 328 will be held to our next calendar.
CS for House Bill number 340, Judiciary amended by the House Judiciary Committee, an act relating to damages in an action for a defect in the design, construction, and remodeling of certain dwellings and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senator Seekins. Signing no recommendation, Senators Davis, French, Gary Stevens. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators Terrio, Ogun. Signing no recommendation, Senator French. I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent committee substitute for House Bill 340 be considered in gross advance third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, House Bill 340 will advance from second to third reading on the same day.
CS for House Bill number 340, Judiciary Amended, an act relating to damages in an action for a defect in the design, construction, and remodeling of certain dwellings and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading under general debate. Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 340 places a limit on the damages that can be awarded in a construction defect lawsuit to the actual cost of necessary repairs or actual damages caused by that construction defect. Then the reasonable expenses of temporary housing would be covered, the reduction in market value, if any, caused by the defect, and finally the reasonable and necessary attorney's fees and costs. Now, this limitation would not apply if the construction defect was caused by gross negligence or reckless or intentional misconduct by the construction professional. House Bill 340 does not limit or affect lawsuits alleging personal injury or wrongful death resulting from construction defects. And there are several reasons why this bill has come forward, and one that the members of this body have heard of extensive testimony in committee work. The cost of general liability insurance has increased dramatically. This adversely affects our builders because they're required by law to carry general liability insurance. Also, the availability of insurance has declined, and policies that are issued have become very limited in their coverage. And there's currently only one insurance provider in Alaska who will provide builders with coverage in the entire state. So we are requiring builders and contractors to obtain insurance, and they're confronted with obtaining insurance through surplus lines, which is extremely expensive and very limited in coverage. This bill may not have an immediate impact on lowering premium rates, but is heavily supported by the housing industry as a way to help slow down the increase in rates and also provide an incentive for insurance companies to come back to Alaska to do business. I think this bill is good public policy, and I urge the members to pass it this morning.
Senator Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, rise in support of this bill. I'd like to say that I doubt if I will have a conflict with this, but I may at some point in the future have a conflict, but at this time I don't. But having said that, in the past I spent a lot of time in the home building industry before I got into the commercial end of cabinet work. And I can tell you that a small builder, a small contractor are close to being an endangered species in this state. The insurance costs have just skyrocketed, I mean, just beyond comprehension. And it's almost impossible for a small builder to spread out the increase in insurance over two or three or four homes. It's almost going to make it where the only people that can possibly afford to build, these costs will all be passed on to the home buyer, ultimately. The only people that can afford to be in business will be larger builders. And like independent, like fishermen that have, you know, it's like a family lifestyle to live on the beach and do a set net site and that kind of stuff. It's a family lifestyle to be an independent contractor and businessman and own your own business and build things and create things with your hands. I know I did it for a long time, and it's sometimes you don't do it for, it's not for the money. It's the satisfaction and of doing it and being able to create something. But I really fear those smaller guys that are out there, the entrepreneurs and the guys that are taking the risk, are at great risk in our state of being almost an endangered species, because there's a ceiling on what they can charge for a house. I mean, the house is worth basically what the appraiser says it's worth, and the bank's only going to loan X amount of dollars on that house, somewhat driven by what a buyer is willing to pay for it. But these insurance costs will be absorbed by the small industry, small businessman. So I hope this this helps. I'm not sure this is going to be the silver bullet that helps these guys out, but I think it's a very important bill to pass. Thanks.
Is there further debate? Senator French.
Mr. President, I just want to put on the record a potential source of conflict. My wife is a real estate agent. She may do business in this area, and I just want to let folks know that that's a potential source of conflict.
Further debate? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the questions that I have for the sponsor is, how do we know that there's protection out there for the potential plaintiffs of the future? And number two, is there since it's a requirement that the contractors have liability insurance, is there a consideration that that requirement be waived in some way?
Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. President, thank you. Existing law provides that before someone can bring a lawsuit, that they go through, that the builder has an opportunity to repair construction defects before that litigation can begin. This basically, if I understand the question correctly, now says that if a litigant brings that case to court, and what their exclusive remedy is for the cost of repairs, and only for those that are defective repairs, and it's somewhat limited at that point in time. What was the second part of the question, Senator?
Senator Olson.
The second part of the question had to do with only one insurance carrier within the state of Alaska. Is there a process where that liability insurance could be waived so as not to go ahead and dissuade potential contractors of the future, as was pointed out by the senator from the Valley that stated what a positive thing it was for the society and families in particular?
Thank you, Mr. President. There is no provision for waiver. You are required to have the insurance, or you're out of compliance with state law.
Is there further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 340, judiciary amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
By vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 340, judiciary amended, has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent vote on final passage be considered the vote for the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 3 by Senators Dyson, Bundy, Wagner, Gary Stevens, Ogun, Stedman. The Judiciary Committee considered the resolution. Zero fiscal note. Signing no recommendation, Senator Ogun, Vice Chair, Senators French, Terrio. The Finance Committee considered the resolution and recommended a Finance Committee substitute. New fiscal note. Signing no recommendation, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs. Signing do pass, Senators Dyson, Bundy, Van Stevens. Signing do not pass, Senator Hoffman. Signing amend, Senator Olson. There are two committee substitutes.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance CS will be considered in lieu of the original bill.
I have no amendments. Oh, excuse me, I have amendment number 1 by Senator Ogun.
I'm not sure that I've got that. Brief it, please.
I have to send it out at the meeting.
Okay. Will the Senate come back to order? Madam Secretary.
There's an amendment number 1 by Senator Ogun.
Senator Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 1.
There is objection. Could you explain the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 1 because of my concern of the ambiguity of this language in the section of the bill. It says that if a governor declares that there's an extraordinary circumstance that exists, and that is too much of, in my opinion, a blank check and an end run around the intent of the constitutional spending limit. Constitutional spending limit is, I think, the first thing we need to do to get our fiscal situation under control. If we don't pass this amendment, it's going to be this could be used to, like I said, be an end run around the intent of putting a cap on spending. So I would ask those the members to support the amendment to truly try to rein in government spending. I believe money to government is like blood to cancer. You know, the more money you give it, the more it's going to just grow in direct proportion to the amount of money available to spend. And this amendment would go a long way to make this constitutional spending limit have some teeth. So I ask for the body's support.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. With some mixed feelings, I rise in objection to the amendment. It's certainly something that we who have worked on the bill and the Finance Committee wrestled with a great deal. Spending caps, and I believe what we've done here is a good one, but it is very difficult to anticipate all of the circumstances that a state or any political subdivision might encounter. We've left in the law a provisions for emergencies, and I think we're all fairly comfortable that if a real emergency comes up, we want the governor to be able to marshal all the resources and spend all the money he sees necessary to deal with it. But we were anticipating here extraordinary circumstances that we wouldn't want to do injustice to the language by calling them an emergency, but indeed there was widespread agreement that additional resources need to be spent. The one that comes to mind for me, and I hope that it happens in my lifetime, and that is that we get permission to build a gas pipeline, and that will be a 5, 6, 7 year period. But as we see the certainty of that coming, I believe that the state will seriously want to consider expanding the budget to build infrastructure, train people, and expand its capacity to oversee and regulate that process as it goes forward. So we put this provision in for those hopefully very rare circumstances when a circumstance comes up and that the state needs to expand its resources and its capacity. I trust that there's enough safeguards here with requiring both the agreement of the governor and a two-thirds vote. It's a close call, and I think that the maker of the amendment is very carefully calling our attention to the propensity for lawmakers and policymakers to want to spend all available funds on a wide variety of things. And I think his concern is very well placed. The bill, if this goes on to become a part of our Constitution, it automatically sunsets in 4 years. And if indeed I turn out to be wrong on this and amendments sponsor is right, we'll have a chance to fix it. I believe that it's a good provision that we've left in here, put in here on for a more extraordinary circumstance, and I would encourage defeating this amendment at this time. Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. President, I rise in opposition to this amendment. I think the verbiage of the portion of the bill that would be deleted not only is a two-thirds safeguard ample, I think, in both houses. It's very hard to get and obtain. But also, the governor would have to specify the circumstances, so that would be fully debated. And the amount of the appropriation would have to be laid out on the table along with the time that the appropriation would be spent, the time span that would govern the extraordinary circumstances. And I think as we move forward in dealing with the fiscal issue at hand, it's virtually impossible for us to guess with any certainty what's coming at us. And clearly, it's, I think, beyond the legislature's capability of defining when and if we're going to have a natural disaster or when we're going to get the actual authority to construct a gas line or other major capital projects that would enhance the quality of life of all of Alaskans. So I would urge the members, with all due respect, to not support this amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Green.
President, I just wanted to kind of clarify that I think the reference to the gas pipeline or a project of that magnitude probably does not fall within the definition, because I think it would be covered under the list of exempted or waived provisions that already occur on page 2 from line 8 to down through 27, and that would either be via the bond language or federal funds, grants, gifts, and or contracts, and that I think any project of that magnitude would already be exempted and waived.
Do we have further debate? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a question for, perhaps it's for the prime sponsor of the resolution, about the relationship between sections E and sections F that we're talking about deleting. Is it the case that section E allows the governor to declare an extraordinary circumstance, and then that declaration brings about, I guess, a bill that would have to be passed by 2/3 of each house? And is it the case that, that section F allows the legislature on its own volition, that is on its own accord, to likewise declare an extraordinary circumstances, or must it be proposed by the governor? I guess I'm just not clear who it is and how it is that extraordinary circumstances can be declared.
Senator Dyson.
As usual, my perceptive friend sees it quite clearly. Section E allows the governor to initiate the extraordinary circumstances, and Section F allows the legislature to do so. And each, by the nature of the division of powers, each has the chance to thwart or, in essence, veto the others. So the net result is either body or either branch can initiate, and but still must have the concurrence of the other branch in order for the extraordinary circumstance funding to go forward.
Senator Ogun.
Thank you. I'm glad we brought up the amendment for no other reason, so we have a better understanding of who's got what authority. The thing that is a little puzzling to me is Section F, and this is another reason why I support the this amendment. Section F allows a legislature to declare an emergency. I'm not sure if they're mutually exclusive. They both have to be declared under this. If the governor has to declare it and the legislature, or they can do it independently. And then in Section F, it allows, even though the legislature voted it by a 2/3 majority, it allows the governor basically to have a veto authority on a 2/3 vote. We've never done that in the Constitution. Constitutional amendments aren't vetoable by the governor because it takes a 2/3 vote to override the governor's veto. So the governor doesn't have a say in whether or not a constitutional amendment goes on the ballot. But in this case, the governor has a say. Even though the legislature has already voted 2/3, he can override it because it has to have the governor's signature. Now, it's silent on whether or not a 3/4 majority, if we can veto his veto with a 3/4 majority, which is typically what we do with budget things. I would assume we can, but I'm not sure. So another reason there's some ambiguity in the language that I didn't get cleared up in my own mind, and another reason why you should vote yes on the amendment, although we'll see how that happens. Sometimes I'm the lone ranger. But.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. The language here is quite deliberate. The legislature cannot, under Section F, declare an extraordinary circumstance and prosecute it forward and spend the money without the governor signing it. It speaks really to the issue raised by the maker of the amendment. We want to be very, very careful in empowering any excursions outside of these guardrails protecting the public coffers. So the legislature is not able to persuade the governor that this is an extraordinary circumstance. The governor has absolute authority to not sign it, and it won't go forward. To do this extraordinary circumstance, must have concurrence of both bodies, both branches, the executive and the legislature.
Further debate. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to vote against it, but I think the previous debate has been somewhat illuminating. And I think that it is odd that what we've done is we've created a constitutional amendment that shifts power to the governor. We allow the governor, on his own act, to declare an emergency that then trumps this constitutional spending limit. But, in fact, if the legislature wants to trump the spending limit, it will be up to the governor to allow that to happen. So it does shift, it seems to me, if I understood the discussion previously, it does seem to me that we're shifting power to the governor's office.
Senator Dyson, can we just get a clarification? I think, however, go over that your last explanation.
Yeah, and I appreciate the concern, but I think the resolution is quite clear. The governor can declare an emergency and spend whatever monies and resources are necessary to deal with the emergency. It requires no concurrence for the legislature. We'll see that in the supplemental budget. And I might add parenthetically, neither emergency monies spent or from the extraordinary circumstance goes into the base for the calculations in the future years. They do not expand the spending limits in the future. They're one-offs to deal with the emergency. So on the basis of an emergency, the legislature cannot stop the governor from expending the money to deal with the emergency. But when it comes to what I hope will be a very rare circumstance, where it's not an emergency, but both the branches agree that it is an extraordinary circumstance, then the present language requires that both branches agree, or it will not go forward. Either can originate, but it won't go forward. On emergency stuff, originates with the governor, and he has the authority to go forward.
Senator Dyson, just a question to clarify. On page 2, bottom of the page, lines 30 and 31, it says, upon the affirmative vote of at least 2/3 of the members of each house. So the governor could declare an emergency, but it would still require an appropriation of the legislature, would it not?
I'm sorry, Mr. President, but that's line 30 is talking about extraordinary circumstances, not emergency.
Senator Green.
In other parts of the statute, the governor does have great ability to declare an emergency, and he has power. He has a process by which he notifies the leaders of both houses of the legislature, and he can, up to a certain amount, by himself, declare certain things and certain amounts of money as emergency over other designated amounts, so he must have the concurrence of the legislature even in emergencies. Even in the declaration of emergency process, there are ceilings on that that currently exist, and he must have the legislature's approval.
Senator Ogun.
Thank you for the latitude to debate more than once. We keep bringing up subjects. There's one question that's not answered for me, and does it require... Can the legislature override, if the governor doesn't sign it, can they override it by a three-quarters vote like all other appropriations? So, this, all right. Another reason to vote for it.
Let's see. Senator Bundy, were you seeking the floor? Any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall Amendment Number 1 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, tally the roll.
4 yeas, 16 nays.
By a vote of 4 yeas, 16 nays, Amendment Number 1 fails to pass the Senate.
There's an Amendment Number 2 by Senator Ogun, which is being passed out.
They will take a brief at ease while it's being distributed. Will the Senate come back to order? Oh, a little bit longer. Will the Senate come back to order? Madam Secretary.
There's an Amendment Number 2 by Senator Ogun.
Senator Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Amendment Number 2.
Is there objection to Amendment Number 2? There is objection.
Thank you, Mr. President. What we have now in this bill, in this resolution, allows the governor to veto an appropriation that the legislature made, even though we got 2/3 or more. At least 2/3 of the members of each house to vote on it. He can veto it, and then we're done. We have no ability to override his veto. Just checked with Tam Cook to verify that I was reading this correctly. She affirmed that I am. So there's no more avenue. So we can think that this is, the legislature can say this. Avenues. We cannot override Ms. Vito. Now, most appropriations require a three-quarter vote to override the override the governor's veto. I mean, if something really important, the legislature has the ability. But this basically shuts us down and ties our hands. So I think we should just eliminate that language from the bill or maybe reconsider and under second read, well, that's another amendment, another day. We'll at any rate, I urge your support because we're tying our hands. We're giving the governor the ability to veto something the legislature by law declares, and there's no avenue at all to override that veto. Period. It's just like almost a, you know, it's like the king's sovereign, arbitrary gavel goes down, and boom, that's it. We're done. So, vote yes,
Senator Elton.
I'm tempted to speak to the royalty comments, but I won't, Mr. President. I just rise in support of this amendment. I'd like to point out that, in fact, the legislature could vote 100%. Every one of us could define an extraordinary circumstance. We may not ever get to 100%, but 100% of us could say we want to do this. And if the governor vetoes it, it's a done deal. There is no other avenue for the legislature. So I'd encourage my colleagues to support amendment number two.
Senator Dyson.
The traces of a grin at the corner of my mouth are not derisive. It has to do with irony. My delightful friend that sits to the right of the maker of this amendment has pointed out a technical glitch, and I've asked the Senate President to hold this in second reading so we can have time to fix that. And I really appreciate that kind of oversight and expertise that she brings to this debate. To the subject here, I suspect my friend who made this amendment suffers a little bit as, well, I don't know. But what we are trying to do here is to make the exercising of this extraordinary circumstance that allows for exceeding our spending guidelines limits here, the guardrails, very difficult. I would suggest to him, if indeed this amendment doesn't pass today, that during the between now and we meet again to consider, and maybe with the concurrence of the previous speaker, going to a three-quarter limit here to override a governor on this. But I want to maintain our present very tough standards to meet anything that goes outside the limits that we're setting here. We don't worry about government spending too much in the tough times. Our history is that we have not done well in the good times. And 25 years ago, when this body sat and we're trying to figure out ways to spend all the money, it's those kind of circumstances we're trying to avoid. And I would encourage us to keep as many constraints on that as we can. So I would appreciate no vote on the amendment at this time.
Further debate? Senator Ogun.
To wrap up, Mr. President, I do worry about spending in tough times. I think we spend too much when we have even tough times. But notwithstanding that, I think this amendment is, without a yes vote on, I'm sorry, a no vote on amendment sets a new precedence in our Constitution for spending, overriding a spending veto. This gives the governor, whoever it is, we need to be looking the long range, not just the short range, on constitutional amendments. This gives any governor the ability to just have absolute veto power and no recourse for the legislative body to override that. And I think that's certainly a groundbreaking precedence and maybe not one that we should do lightly. So, vote yes.
Okay, do we have further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall amendment number two pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary would tally the roll.
11 yeas, 9 nays.
By a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays, Amendment number 2 passes the Senate. Any further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
And Senator Dyson, we'll just carry this forward. In third reading, we can go back to second reading. So if you have language that need to work out between tomorrow, we'll be able to go back. So it'll be carried forward to our next calendar up here in third reading.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 31 by the Senate Rules Committee, relating to urging the United States Congress to compensate the state of Alaska for the effect of federal land ownership on the state's ability to fund public education. The State Affairs Committee considered the resolution and recommended a State Affairs Committee substitute. Zero fiscal note, signing DuPass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Hoffman, Cowdery, Stedman, Guest. The Resources Committee considered the resolution and recommended adoption of the previous State Affairs Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note, signing DuPass, Senator Wagner, Vice Chair, Senators Dyson, Seekins. Signing no recommendation, Senators Elton, Ben Stevens. There's a State Affairs Committee substitute.
Senator Gary Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the State Affairs Committee substitute for SJR 31.
Without objection, the State Affairs CS will be adopted in lieu of the original language.
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 31 being considered gross, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, Senate Joint Resolution 31 will advance from second to third reading on the same day.
CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 31, State Affairs, relating to urging the United States Congress to compensate the state of Alaska for the effect of federal land ownership on the state's ability to fund public education.
We are in third reading. Do we have a debate? Senator Stedman.
Mr. President, I rise in support of Senate Joint Resolution 31 relating to urging the United States Congress to compensate the state of Alaska for the effect of federal land ownership and on the state's ability to fund public schools. The Executive Committee of the Council of State Governments West adopted this in July of 2002. They include 13 states of the Western region, expressing in this resolution how federal land ownership hinders Western states and their ability to fund education. These 13 states, most of which have adopted these resolutions, or a similar type resolution, except for California, Washington, Colorado, and Alaska. The Western Governors Association also endorses this similar resolutions. The Western states have been falling behind in their educational funding when measured in growth of real per capita expenditures during the period of 1979 to 1998. The growth of real per capita expenditures in the 13 Western states is less than half of what it is in the 37 other states, 27% versus 57%. So we are definitely behind. On average, enrollment in Western states is projected to increase from the period of 2002 to 2011 by roughly 7.1%, while in the eastern side of the country, it's going to decline. So the magnitude of our disadvantage is going to increase. Yet Western states, their state and local taxes as a percent of personal income are as high or higher than the other states. From the period of 1998 to 99, the Western states was 11.1% versus 10.9, and Alaska was 10.3. So we in the Western region are paying as a percent substantially higher given the federal land ownership that we have. Western states' commitment to education as a percent of the state budget is roughly equal to the eastern side. Roughly there, you're looking at 32.6 to 32.7, and that's pretty much a dead heat. The problem lies in the federal government and the enormous amount of land it owns in the western states. As we all know, the original 13 colonies, that's virtually all in private ownership. And as the United States moved west, the percent of federal lands have increased, percent of ownership, and as they moved substantially west into roughly a line from Montana to New Mexico, the percent of ownership jumps way up. On the aggregate of the eastern side, it's roughly 14%, and on the western section we're talking about, it's about 60% federal. The federal land ownership impacts our education in the western states in roughly two ways. There's enabling acts and property tax. Enabling acts were created in 1977 and roughly promised 5% of the proceeds of federal land sales to help education and public benefits, and that's no longer excuse me, that was abandoned, excuse me, in 1977, not started in 77. And that substantially reduced the funding that would have headed our way into the billions, some would say up to $14 billion. States, along with Alaska's, we're all aware, cannot tax federal property. So we, in a state that has substantially, or substantially dominated by federal land, lose huge amounts of revenue in property tax that would be directed into our schools and other coffers. For the western states, again, roughly that line from New Mexico to Montana, it's about $4 billion annually. They have, the federal government has come in with PILT, or the payment in lieu of taxes, but it just pales in the amount that they, or the states, would be collecting if this property was in private hands. And it's roughly, in 2001, roughly only 5%, excuse me, 4% of the annual property tax revenue lost in the western states. So, Mr. President, we are definitely at a disadvantage here in Alaska, more so than any other state. And this resolution's purpose is to create, educate, and build, and petition. We're going to create legislative awareness, educate the public, build a Western state coalition, and petition Congress to compensate the Western states. In summary, Western states are financially harmed in a significant way by the amount of federal land ownership. The conclusion is that federal land ownership hinders Western states' ability to fund our public education. And I'm sure that all of Alaskans are very concerned on the education, the ability to fund it, and the quality of our students. That, Mr. President, I ask support of the resolution. Thank you.
Any further debate? Senator Ogden.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of the resolution, but I would like to take issue with one statement that previous speaker said, that all the Western states are falling behind on education. The exception is Wyoming, which had a $1 billion surplus this year, primarily due to coal-bed methane development.
Any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 31 State Affairs pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary to lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Secretary would tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
By vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 31 State Affairs has passed the Senate.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 12 by Senators Wilkin, Bundy, Cowdery, Green, Ogun, Seekins, Ben Stevens, Gary Stevens, Wagner, requesting the local boundary commission to consider borough incorporation for certain unorganized areas. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered the resolution. Zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Wagner, Chair, Senators Taylor, Gary Stevens. State Affairs Committee considered the resolution. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Cowdery, Stedman, signing due not pass, Senator Guest. I have no amendments.
Mr. Minority Leader,
we have an ease, please.
Brief at ease.
Would the Senate come back to order, please? Madam Secretary, where were we? Just done second reading, huh? Okay, we are in second reading on SCR 12. Because it is a concurrent resolution, second reading is of where we take final action. Is there debate? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, SCRs pass in second reading.
We could delay it a day if you wanted.
No, I'm fine. Mr. President, thank you. I think it's important just to... The resolution itself, I think, is very straightforward. It just asks those that today have the capacity in unorganized Alaska to pay for their schools to do so, and sets in place a process by which that natural evolution of government can take place. I want to share with the body today something I found as I've become involved in this, some very interesting historical data. Alaska is the only state in the nation that has something called unorganized Alaska. And before we had statehood, we were, of course, all unorganized. And in fact, it was banned by the territorial government. But when our constitutional convention got together in 1955, it's interesting to see that the local government committee was the most active group in the whole effort there in Fairbanks. They met some 44 times and took their job obviously very seriously. And in fact, they held the issue of organized areas self-governance to such a high standard, and it was so important to them that when our constitution was finally passed in 1958, I believe, or somewhere in there, they set forth five commissions that are embodied in the Constitution. I think it's important to see to what level the Founding Fathers held governance embodied in the Local Boundary Commission. There are five of those, and they are the Redistricting Commission that meets, of course, every 10 years to decide how people are elected. Two of the constitutionally embodied commissions are having to do with our judicial system, the Council for Judicial Conduct and the Alaska Judicial Commission, and then the Board of Regents. So they held in high regard the university in our state. Back in 1961, of course, there was a voluntary Borough Act, which didn't go very far. And when the legislature got together in 1963, they looked back at Article 10, Section 3, that said, methods by which boroughs may be organized, incorporated, merged, consolidated, reclassified, or dissolved may be prescribed by law. And that's what Senate Concurrent Resolution does. In the 1963 Mandatory Borough Act that created 8 of our boroughs, which, by the way, my Senator Ralph Rivers voted against, there was a promise made, and it's a promise that we should keep in mind. Embodied in the Declaration of Intent, Section 1, I'll read, no area incorporated as an organized borough shall be deprived of state services, revenues, or assistance, or be otherwise penalized because of incorporation. Well, today, FY05, those areas of the state that are incorporated will pay $171 million of taxpayer monies before they get their first nickel of state money. In other words, because they're incorporated, they will be penalized $171 million, while those in unorganized Alaska get their schools for free, both operating and capital. I think we need to look back to 1963 and remember that promise that was made. The Local Boundary Commission, a group of five hardworking Alaskans, in 2002 gave us a report, which you all have, and you have, in fact, the cover sheet today. And they went out and looked at unorganized Alaska, and they brought back 7 areas that they thought met the standards of borough incorporation. And those aren't things that they just pick out of the air, and willy-nilly look at a place and say, well, thou shalt have local governance. There's 11 standards, and you have to almost go down a checklist to become qualified or to deemed possible for local governance. And those I won't read those to you, but they're very clear. They come from our Constitution, they come from our statutes, and they come from our regulations. SCR 12 sets in place also a very, very deliberate public process by which areas can assume local governance. And it should be noted that existing law does not go away. If an area of the state thinks that they would like to have local governance, and it would benefit their area, they could start today. And they could file a petition just as they have since statehood. But in lieu of that, of those folks that, in my opinion, are dodging local responsibility and don't see the benefit by local governance, this sets in place a deliberate system, of which you'll see on your trifold is about 56 weeks with five areas of public involvement and public input. It's not the state government setting down government on top of other people. It takes into account the region of the state, and in the end says that local government, the best government, is a government closest to the people. With that, Mr. President, this is the natural evolution of state government in Alaska. It brings the responsibility for funding for schools and other government as they would so choose to the people. And the process starts with the Local Boundary Commission, empowered to do so by Senate Concurrent Resolution 12, and I encourage your support.
Further debate? Senator Guest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I stand in strong opposition to this resolution for multiple reasons, but I know the hour is late, so I'm just going to give you the highlights. It's back to local control, which seems to be a theme of this legislative session, and the fact that people should be making this choice and we shouldn't be forcing it on them. But I want to go to two of the points, and the senator from Fairbanks and I have been discussing this now for, I don't know, about 9 months or so, two of the points that he makes and why I disagree with this resolution. The first is the argument that this is about schools and school funding, and that's it. It's not. It's about forcing local areas to form governments, and it's taking that local control away from the people that live in the area. If it was just about schools, Mr. President, we have a provision. Now, I'm still in awe of the people that wrote our Constitution, and if I may, from Article 10, Section 6, the legislature may exercise any power or function in an unorganized borough which the Assembly may exercise in an organized borough. We sit as the Assembly for unorganized boroughs. If we wanted to make this about fairness in the educational system, then we could do that. We would not have to force mandatory government on people. That has not been the way that we've gone about this, and I have to say from the testimony in committee, it was the preferred route from people in that area. But we sit here and we talk about, well, this is because, you know, urban Alaska or organized Alaska is paying so much for education, rural isn't, which I'll let someone else take those arguments because I'm so sick of fighting about what really the foundation formula does and doesn't do. But if we actually wanted these areas in this foundation formula to do this, we could do that. Yet that's not the proposal in front of you. The proposal in front of you is not about schools and it's not about education. It's about the state forcing a local community to do something and taking the control away from them. We have an option. That option is in the Constitution. We're not exercising that option. The second point and the second reason that I rise to speak against this resolution is the argument about process. Now, I have to say that as someone who appreciates good process, I appreciate the thought that the senator has put into this, even if I disagree with the end result. As he said, it's not doing mandatory boroughs for everyone. It's just for some and those that have capacity and all this. And he's gone through this 52-week process and all of that, which I have to say, from an intellectual standpoint, I appreciate. But then what happens is we cherry pick. And we say, well, they looked at seven, but we're only going to look at four, and it's actually those four that have the least probability of getting through the process. And in response, I've heard, well, those are the ones already paying for schools. Well, this isn't about schools. This is about a process to determine whether or not an area should be mandated by us to be a borough. And why all seven aren't in here, it wrecks what I think has been a lot of time on a process. And I've heard, well, you got to walk before you run. Well, the four that are in here that have the least probability, they're the ones still, you know, still in their infancy. Not the ones that are close, that could actually do this, that maybe they're not doing it because they want to, you know, this eluding of revenue or paying their fair share. So I just see this resolution as fundamentally flawed in so many different ways. It's fundamentally flawed because if it was about education, if we want to solve that part, then this should be a bill that is providing that authority to the legislature to tax those areas for education. We have that authority. This is not about education. And it's not about a good process. It's not about a good precedent going forward. Because what precedent we're setting with this is whoever does the resolutions pretty much, you know, can pick or choose which boroughs they want to examine. And we've been picking and choosing and ending up in court because we pick and choose on this for a while. I mean, if it's going to be a good process, then follow through with the process. If it's going to be about education, let's do it about education. What this is about taking away local control, again, which this Senate will be pondering. So, again, I speak against this resolution. I just don't think it is what it has been presented as. Thank you.
Further debate, Senator Ogun.
Thank you. I'm puzzled at the previous speaker's assertion that this is taking local control away from the people in that area when we are their assembly. I mean, I don't see that as being local control. I see this as empowering people in the area to have more local control. Thank you.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to support the resolution and would just remind the body that the sponsor of the resolution suggested that in Alaska's history, we did have a voluntary borough movement. And I don't think we have a borough in the state of Alaska today that did not arise from some strong state encouragement to form a borough. And if we were to wait for, and I think our people that wrote the Constitution discuss this, if we were to wait until the local folks wanted to pick up their share of the burden, we wouldn't have any boroughs in Alaska today.
Further debate, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. President, I rise up in opposition to this legislation as well. And I do so, this has come up on several occasions, but we have to look at how to make our communities more viable. Recently, in recent history, we've seen many communities come forward and ask for dissolution of their governments. just in this last report, we have the city of Stebbins and the Lower Kalispell asking about information of dissolution. Since the law was put into effect in 1989, we've had over 90 communities ask about dissolution, and many of them looking at how to get out from under a second-class city or first-class city and reorganize under federal law. And I guess in looking at the list of communities that have been successful, there's over a dozen of them that have done that so far throughout the state of Alaska, saying that we do not want to have services or organize and provide services under the laws of the state of Alaska. And I think we should sit back and take a look at why this is happening. Maybe there's not the support there from the state. Maybe many of the promises of statehood aren't being fulfilled. Is something that needs to be discussed. But what we're talking about here is not only not the function of a single government, but try to put another layer of government on top of these existing governments that are failing and are looking at other ways to provide governmental services in their areas. You know, and I think that when one level of government is working, you throw another level on top of that, surely they're not going to work. And many of these areas weren't even dissolved, but they existed for a number of years, but never even had any council meetings, never even had any, never had a budget adopted. What's going to happen in that scenario when we look at these boroughs and they say, we're not going to listen to you. Our existing governments aren't working. Why are we going to put another layer of government on? You know, it's government by the people, and they're the ones that should be deciding that. But going to the crux of the sponsor's statement of paying their fair share, I received this communication from Randy Hoffbeck of the Department of Revenue, and he states that through this Senate Concurrent Resolution number 12, the four areas that are being considered for borough formation, their combined contribution to education would total about $4 million. But if you look at the Copper River Basin model borough, if they had levied a 20 mil property tax, they would receive $6 million. Guess where that $6 million comes from? State coffers. So basically, if that happened, these four boroughs and the tax base would come from the Alaska pipeline, this would mean a net loss to the state coffers of $2 million. Now, surely, we may be getting funds from the other three boroughs, but again, the net to the state coffers is $2 million less by forcing government, another layer of government, on top of existing governments that are failing. And I think that this sends the wrong message. We should be looking at trying to strengthen these communities and build, work with them and make them feel a part of the state instead of them looking at us and dissolving and trying to form governments under federal law. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, I'd like to respond to both the prior speakers. One thing that makes this project so much fun is that there's so much data. First to a senator to my left, and she's been consistent in challenging why out of the seven I chose the four. And I've explained on numerous occasions that you do have to walk before you run. This is a major project on behalf of the Local Boundary Commission. So you have to prioritize. I drew the bright line on support for local schools. If you look for the regions that are excluded from SCR 12, which is Aleutians West, Prince William Sound, and Wrangell-Petersburg, the percent of the population within the school district, which means they're paying for their schools to the 4 mil limit and more, is 89%, 93%, and 94% for those respectively. If you look at the four regions that are included in SCR 12, Upper Canada, Copper River Basin, Glacier Bay, and Chatham, the percents are as follows: 0, 0, 59%, and 52%. So that's how I drew the line. I think when you contribute to your schools, you probably pay more attention to what's happening within the school. Secondly, I think that was her comment. The other was in regard to the senator from Bethel. Correct, there have been dissolution inquiries. In fact, if we look back to 1989, let me just show you how it's changed since 1989. 1989, we had 14, these are inquiries. These are just someone writes letters and says, I'm thinking about. 1989, 14, 90, 20, 91, none, 92, 5, 93, 12, 94, 11, 95, 12. 96, you're going to see a change here. 96, 6, 97, 1, 98, 2, 99, 3, 2003, 01, 3, 022, and 036. So those are the inquiries. So what did those amount to? Since 1990, we have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 cities dissolved, two of which dissolved because they were incorporated within a new borough. The other five were dissolved as an inactive city, and in each of the five, one in 1996, one in 02, oh, excuse me, one in 1996, another in 96, one in 97, another 97, and one in 95, they were they were small cities, and their liabilities and assets were taken over by tribal councils. So there may be a lot of inquiries, but there certainly hasn't been a run from becoming organized to being unorganized. The last, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Senator French.
Senator French, were you seeking the floor? Do we have further debate? Senator Wilkin?
Place a call in the Senate.
Call has been placed. We can continue debate while this call is being satisfied. Is there further debate? Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I look through the resolution, I see what the final end for the commission is to do is to bring us recommendations, to take a look at the facts, to consider whether or not there should be boroughs formed here. The final decision is ours. Somewhere down the road, when these recommendations are brought to us, we have to decide whether or not the elements essential for incorporation are there. And if we don't start from somewhere, we never get anywhere. And it seems to me that this review helps me answer a lot of questions. Can these areas sustain their own government? Can they contribute to their own schools? At this point, I have a lot of information, as the prime sponsor said, that's a lot of data. But this Boundary Commission study, the consideration, to present us with a recommendation, I think is a valuable exercise. Because in the end, we decide whether or not we're going to follow through with that recommendation. Thank you.
Any further debate? Senator Guess.
Just to clarify for the body and anyone that's listening, after someone who lived through Homer annexation, to the member from Fairbanks, actually what happens is they come back with a recommendation and this body has to act to do anything different. So it's not as if a bill comes back that is then debated on through the legislature and comes to the floor. It is a very laborious process to go back and from the LBC recommendations and to change those. So just clarifying the process. Thank you.
Senator Guess, was that the Homer annexation, did you say?
That's in any decision that LBC makes. Has to come back, and we have to do something to change that recommendation, or it goes into effect.
But the example you used was in
the Homer annexation, okay, 3-4 years ago.
Thank you. Any further debate, Senator Stedman?
I rise in support of this resolution. I recognize that we stand as the Assembly for the Unorganized Boroughs, but we're a country of representation for the people and by the people. And the closer we can get our government decisions to the people, the better off
the nation and the state is. Therefore, I support this encouragement and direction of organizing the unorganized boroughs, and in particular, the ones that certainly can't afford it and should be very willing to support the education of the children of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Senator French.
Sorry, Mr. President, I can't resist that one. I think of the three options of the people, by the people, and for the people, we're striking out on two out of those three. That is, we're doing it for them, but it's certainly not of them, and it's certainly not by them. Thank you.
Further debate. Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall Senate concurrent resolution 12 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
11 yeas, 9 nays.
So by 11 yeas, 9 nays, the Senate concurrent resolution passes the Senate by the skin of its teeth. Senator Lincoln.
I give notice on reconsideration on SCR 12.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on SCR 12. That concludes the data calendar. Brings us down to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that we bring up concurrence vote on committee substitute for Senate Bill 241.
This should be in everybody's concurrence file. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur to the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill 241. For the members' information, line page 1, line 4, deleted was 1 million, inserted was 1.65 million. And encourage a yes vote.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I too support the additional funds for the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. Whenever we can staff up and study up to do a good job for the people of Alaska, that's an advisable thing to do. So I recommend a yes vote on concurrence as well.
Senator Green. Brief please.
Will the Senate please come back to order? The concurrence vote or motion has been made. Recommendation by both the majority and minority leaders for a yes vote. Is there any further debate? Seeing none, members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
19 yeas, 1 nay.
By vote of 19 yeas, 1 nay, we have concurred in the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 241, Finance Amended House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent to vote on final passage be considered the vote for the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause. Do we have other unfinished business? Mr. Minority Leader.
There is an accompanying letter of intent. Does the Majority Leader plan to move the letter of intent?
Would you like to make motion on the letter?
Yes, sure. I move the letter of intent.
The letter of intent has been moved. I know there was some question earlier about the wording of the letter and where it says $650,000 of the appropriation in SB 241 be associated directly. We're not quite sure what associated directly means. So, the motion has been made to adopt the letter of intent. Is there is objection? Do we have debate? Seeing none, question before the Senator Lincoln.
Since you all have discussed that, what was the response to what associated directly means?
Senator Lincoln, other than members asking each other, I didn't check it by legal or ask the sponsor of the letter. I didn't have a chance to do that. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I mean, if memory serves me correctly, the debate wasn't that long ago in the other body, but if memory serves me correctly, the intent of the letter of intent is to ensure that $650,000 of this appropriation go to ANGDA and not be parceled out by revenue to ANGDA on an as-needed basis. So voting for this letter of intent assures that ANGDA remains semi-independent of the Department of Revenue.
Senator Elton, I want to make sure everybody knows this is the letter of intent. If the other body had chosen to make a specific allocation, they could have done that. This is just a letter of intent. Any further debate? Seeing none, members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
15 yeas, 5 nays.
By vote of 15 yeas, 5 nays, letter of intent has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader, do we have a special order citation today?
Yes, Mr. President. I'm asking unanimous consent that we take up the citation honoring the Service High School hockey team as special order business this time.
Without objection, that will be taken up at this time.
I move and ask unanimous consent the citation honoring the Service High School hockey team be approved at this time. And ask unanimous consent.
Without objection, the citation for the hockey team will be approved under special order of business. Other unfinished business? Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused on April 16th for personal business.
Without objection, the Senator will be excused on the 16th. Any other unfinished business? Senator Wagner.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from plain time April 8th till plain time morning of April 13th for personal and state business.
Without objection, the Senator will be shown as excused. Senator Gary Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from call of the Senate on April 8th to plain time April 13th for personal and state business.
Without objection, Senator will be excused. Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call of the Senate from plain time the afternoon of the 29th of April till plain time the morning of the 1st of May to set to attend my son's wedding.
Without objection, Senator will be excused. Any other unfinished business? So none. Do we have announcements today? Senator Dyson.
Thank you. We have a full schedule in Senate House this afternoon. We will give members a chance to grab a bit of lunch and meet at 2.
Okay. It is our intent to have a floor session every day this week just to try and sort of clear the decks before we have the Easter break. Special orders? Seeing none, Mr. Majority Leader.
Move the Senate stand adjourned at 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 6th.
11 a.m. on Tuesday.